Welcome to Evening Under Lamplight, the show that invites you to attend on Cambridge Community Radio, Cambridge 105, with your host, Robert Louis Abrahamson. Get in touch with us, well, with me, at lamplight@cambridge105fm. And come to momentsunderlamplight.com, where you'll find podcasts of our shows. You can also be our friend on Facebook, of course. Tell others about the show, too. Let them take a chance with us, and that's all it really is. Just a chance. Who knows if they'll like the show? All we can do is guess that they might. Nothing certain, is it? Of course not. As we will discover this evening under lamplight, as we attend to ideas and readings and songs about gambling. Why gambling of all things? Asked a friend the other day when I told her the theme of our next show. What did that word gambling conjure up for her? Sleazy lottery winners? Even sleazier casino addicts? Well, yes, these things count as gambling, but so does a great deal more, as I hope we'll see as we move along this evening. What the word gambling seems to suggest to lots of songwriters is the wandering loner with no roots. Perhaps this is simply because gambling rhymes with rambling. Certainly many songs build upon this rhyme. And here's one, sung by Cisco Houston, called Rambling Gambling Man. He wanders and lays his money down wherever he meets with a deck of cards. The two seem to go together. This is a breezy, self-satisfied song. He passes the queens and checks the kings and bets those aces high. But wait, something happens. He lost his money when he met his honey. Yes, he gets hooked up with a woman. So now he's dealt a lover's hand of hearts. But he doesn't seem to mind too much. He just adopts a slightly different set of gambling cliches. He and his wife and the little one that's going to come along will become three of a kind.
I am a ramblin' gambling man, I gamble down in town. Whenever I meet with a deck of cards, I lay my money down. Boys, I lay my money down. I'm a rambler, I'm a gambler, I'm a ramblin' gambling man. I'm a rambler, I'm a gambler, and a gambler when I can. Now if you want to gamble your luck, you want to try, just pass the queens and check the kings and bet your aces high. Boys, and bet those aces high. I'm a rambler, I'm a gambler, I'm a rambling gambling man. I'm a rambler, I'm a gambler, and I gamble when I can. Well, I've gambled around in Vegas town with money in my jeans, but I lost my money where I won my honey, way down in New Orleans, way down in New Orleans. She took me in her parlor and she cooled me with her fan, and she swore I was the prettiest thing in the shape of mortal man, in the shape of mortal man. I'm a rambler, I'm a gambler, I'm a rambling gambling man. I'm a rambler, I'm a gambler, and I gamble when I can. My daughter, my dear daughter, how can you treat me so and leave your dear old mama and with this gambler go, and with this gambler go? Well, deal around the cards, boys, and give me just five cards. I'll show you ramblin' gambling men a lover's hand of hearts. well, a lover's hand of hearts. I'm a rambler, I'm a gambler, I'm a ramblin', gamblin' man. I'm a rambler, I'm a gambler, oh, I gamble when I can. Well, I hear the train a-comin', she's blowin' down the line. You can bet your stack when we come back, we'll be three of a kind. We'll be three of a kind. I'm a rambler, I'm a gambler, I'm a ramblin', gamblin' man. I'm a rambler, I'm a gambler, and I gamble when I can. I'm a ramblin', gamblin' man.
In his song to Woody, Bob Dylan paid tribute to Cisco Houston as one of the old-timers the young Dylan looked up to. Here's to Cisco and Sonny and Lead Belly too, he sang to Woody Guthrie, and to all the good people that traveled with you. And Dylan added his own contribution to the Ramblin' Gamblin' theme with his song Ramblin' Gamblin' Willie. Now the Ramblin' Gambler has a name, Willie O'Connolly, a loner but also a womanizer with 27 children, though he never had a wife. He was the gamblest man around. Only Dylan could get away with that word. He gambled all his life and always won the most. He wasn't exactly an outlaw, and he had a heart of gold, of course, as these legendary characters have to have. He wore no rings or fancy things, but he supported his children and their mothers and spread his money wide to help the sick and poor. And he died, as I suppose he would have wanted to die, at the gambling table. He pulled that dead man's hand, and his gambling days were up.
Come around, you roving gamblers, and a story I will tell about the greatest gambler, y'all should know him well. His name was Willie O'Connolly, and he gambled all his life. He's had 27 children, yet he's never had a wife. And it's right, Willie, right. Roll, Willie, roll. Wherever you're gambling now, nobody knows. Well, he gambled in the White House and in the railroad yards. Wherever there was people, there was Willie and his cards. He had the reputation as the gamblingest man around. Wives would keep their husbands home when Willie came to town. And it's ride, Willie, ride. Roll, Willie, roll. Wherever you're gambling now, nobody knows. Sailing down the Mississippi to a town called New Orleans, they're still talking about that card game on that Jackson Queen. I've come to win some money, gambling, Willie says. When the game finally ended up, the whole darn boat was his. And it's ride, Willie, ride. Roll, Willie, roll. Wherever you're gambling now, nobody knows. Up in the Rocky Mountains in a town called Cripple Creek, there was an all-night poker game, lasted about a week. 900 miners had laid their money down. When Willie finally left the room, he owned the whole darn town. And it's ride, Willie, ride. Roll, Willie, roll. Wherever you're gambling now, nobody knows. But Willie had a heart of gold, and this I know is true. He supported all his children and all their mothers too. He wore no wings of fancy things like other gamblers wore. He spread his money far and wide to help the sick and poor. And it's ride, Willie, ride. Roll, Willie, roll. Wherever you're gambling now, nobody knows. When you played your cards with Willie, you never really knew whether he was bluffing or whether he was true. You won a fortune from a man who folded in his chair. The man, he left a diamond flush. Willie didn't even have a pair. And it's ride, Willie, ride. Roll, Willie, roll. Wherever you're gambling now, nobody knows. It was late one evening during a poker game. A man lost all his money, said Willie was to blame. He shot poor Willie through the head, which was a tragic fate. Willie's cards fell on the floor, they were aces back with eights. And it's ride, Willie, ride. Roll, Willie, roll. Wherever you're gambling now, nobody knows. So all you rambling gamblers, wherever you might be, the moral of the story is very plain to see. Make your money while you can before you have to stop. For when you pull that dead man's hand, your gambling days are up. And it's ride, Willie, ride. Roll, Willie, roll. Wherever you're gambling now, nobody knows.
That was Bob Dylan and Ramblin' Gamblin' Willie, an early song, as you can tell. Gambling, of course, is a kind of game. And being a game, there are rules, and having rules, it's always possible to break the rules, which is called cheating. As we'll see soon, cheating can help you get what you want, but it spoils any fun there might be. Bluffing is a part of gambling, too, but it's not cheating. It's just stretching the rules to see how far we can go, how much we can get away with. Once it passes over into actual deceit, it becomes fraud, and we know what happens to the fraudulent souls once they get to Dante's Inferno. They are in the lowest positions there. But bluff is not fraud, if only because anyone with any sense knows that a gambler will stretch the rules and bluff. The reply is not to condemn the bluffer, but to bluff back, and then to call the other person's bluff, if you feel confident enough to. At the heart of gambling is luck. To gamble is to take a chance, take a risk. There's never a sure course. We look out carefully for what's happened before, we count the cards, for instance, and we take a good guess at what might happen next. And we stake something on this prediction of what might happen next. We do this sort of thing all the time. Think of when you're driving, how much gambling is there? Whenever I turn on to the A14, I'm always gambling that it won't, this time, be held up with a traffic jam or an accident. A woman I know is wondering whether she should have a shoulder operation. Her shoulder hurts now, but perhaps the operation will cause her more pain than she has now. Perhaps the inconvenience of convalescing will be worse than the benefit of the operation. All medical procedures are gambles of some sort. She weighs up the odds and has to put down her bet, or else fold and leave the game. The real excitement in gambling comes when the stakes are high and the odds are tricky. Race car drivers know this, mountain climbers too, but people with bad shoulders, I'm afraid, are not looking for the thrills of gambling. They'd rather just be out of pain. But no such luck without staking their bodies on an operation. Well, look, there are many songs about rambling gamblers, and I wanted to play many of them here, but at the last minute I had to cut them out. Sorry, Kevin, I had to abandon Kenny Rogers, but thanks for reminding me of the gambler. But it's worth asking why there are so many country-western songs about gamblers. Well, that's part of their vocabulary, the language of outlaws, the Old West, passionate risks for high stakes, and the unfair pain life seems always to inflict on us small folk who have no control over things. Maybe it's those broad plains out west or that huge sky. You're always at the mercy of whatever hand you've been dealt. Now, here's a song that takes that country western tradition and brings it to perfection. We've heard Lily, Rosemary, and the Jack of Hearts before on Evening Under Lamplight, but let's look at it here as a song about gambling. Yes, this evening, Under Lamplight, we're featuring not one but two Dylan songs. The song moves along with a kind of hoedown swing to it, as, like all gamblers, we keep shifting our partners and trying out someone new. There's always something restless about gambling. The setting of the song is the cabaret where the gambling wheel has been shut down, but the real gambling is about to take place between the main players. Our hero, a stranger, is simply called the Jack of Hearts, a character long known as a rogue ever since he stole the tarts from the Queen of Hearts. A knave, in fact. The first thing he does is set it up for everyone, ostensibly buying drinks, but actually, we learn later, he's setting up his latest gamble. Then he moved into the corner, face down like the Jack of Hearts. His bluff. He hides his face. He's the card in the hole that will spring up to take the trick. He hopes. And what is a jack, anyway? A jack is often that mechanism that pops up. When you play the harpsichord, you press a key which sets in motion the jack, which rises up to pluck the strings. The jack of a car lifts the frame so you can change a tire, though even in the days of carriages, the word was in use, I think, to raise the body of a carriage for smoother riding. Jack, along with Jill, popped up the hill. Nimble Jack jumped over the candlestick. And, of course, the jack-in-a-box springs up to everyone's surprise. It's no wonder that the Jack of Hearts is the gamblest card in the pack. And then there's Lily, who's playing five-card stud backstage. She had two queens and was looking for a third to match her pair, but instead she drew up the Jack of Hearts. There he is again, showing up when least expected. And there's Big Jim, the King of Diamonds. But his bodyguards and silver cane were no match for the Jack of Hearts. The power of money always loses to the trickery of this knave of hearts. And the second queen here, Rosemary, tired of playing the role of Big Jim's wife, a queen without a crown. She had done a lot of bad things, even once tried suicide, was looking to do just one good deed before she died. But how does she go about doing that? Well, she was gazing to the future, riding on the Jack of Hearts. She's staking her life, for her soul, I suppose, on the Jack of Hearts. He has a lot riding on him. He comes into town, stirs up the heart of Lily, gives a final ride to Rosemary, gets off with quite a haul of Big Jim's money, and rides out again to meet the boys in the darkness by the riverbed. He's had his gamble, won, and disappeared. Willie O'Connolly couldn't have done it better. But here's the song now, perhaps my very favorite Dylan song, at least for the way Dylan's voice plays with the words and the meter. And the music sweeps us along, the organ weaving in and out. There's nothing like it. Take your partners and let's go. And it will be a long dance, so hold on.
The festival was over and the boys were all planning for a ball. The cabaret was quiet except for the drilling in the wall. The curfew had been lifted and the gambling wheel shut down. Anyone with any sense had already left town. He was standing in the doorway looking like the Jack of Hearts. Across the mirrored room, set it up for everyone, he said. permits to do what they were doing before he turned their heads. Then he walked up to a stranger and he asked him with a grin, "Could you kindly tell me, friend, what time the show begins?" Then he moved into the corner, face down like the Jack of Hearts. Backstage, the girls were playing five cards, stood by the stairs. Lily had two queens, she was hoping for a third to match her pair. Outside the streets were filling up, the window was open wide. A gentle breeze was blowing, you could feel it from inside. Lily called another bet and drew up the Jack of Hearts. Big Jim was no one's fool, he owned the town's only diamond mine. He made his usual entrance, looking so dandy and so fine. With his bodyguards and silver cane in every hair in place, he took whatever he wanted to and he laid it all to waste. But his bodyguards and silver cane were no match for the Jack of Hearts. Rosemary combed her hair and took a carriage into town. She slipped in through the side door, looking like a queen without a crown. She fluttered her false eyelashes and whispered in his ear, "Sorry, darling, that I'm late," but he didn't seem to hear. He was staring into space over at the Jack of Hearts. "I know I've seen that face somewhere," Big Jim was thinking to himself. "Maybe down in Mexico or a picture upon somebody's shelf." But then the crowd began to stamp the feet and the house lights did dim. And in the darkness of the room there was only Jim and him, staring at the butterfly who just drew the Jack of Hearts. Lily was a princess, she was fair-skinned and precious as a child. She did whatever she had to do, she had that certain flash every time she smiled. Home and lots of strange affairs, with men in every walk of life which took her everywhere. But she never met anyone quite like the Jack of Hearts. The hanging judge came in unnoticed and was being wined and dined. The drilling in the wall kept up, but no one seemed to pay it any mind. It was known except maybe the Jack of Hearts. Rosemary started drinking hard and seeing her reflection in the knife. She was tired of the attention, tired of playing the role of Big Jim's wife. She had done a lot of bad things, even once tried suicide. Was looking to do just one good deed before she died. She was gazing to the future, riding on the Jack of Hearts. Lily took her dress off, married it away. As your luck ran out, she laughed at him. "Well, I guess you must have known it would someday. Be careful not to touch the wall, there's a brand new coat of paint. I'm glad to see you're still alive, you looking like a sage." Down the hallway, footsteps were coming for the Jack of Hearts. The backstage manager was pacing all around by his chair. "There's something funny going on," he said, "I can just feel it in the air." To get the hanging judge, but the hanging judge was drunk. As the leading actor hurried by in the costume of a monk, there was no actor anywhere better than the Jack of Hearts. No one knew the a circumstance, but they say that it happened pretty quick. The door to the dressing room burst open and a cold revolver clicked. And Big Jim was standing there, you couldn't say surprised. Rosemary right beside him, steady in her eyes. She was with Big Jim, but she was leaning to the jack of hearts. Two doors down, the boys finally made it through the wall and cleaned out the bank safe. It said they got off with quite a haul. In the darkness by the riverbed, they waited on the ground for one more member who had business back in town. For they couldn't go no further without the jack of hire. The next day was hanging day, the sky was overcast and black. Big Jim lay covered up, killed by a penknife in the back. And Rosemary on the gallows, she didn't even blink. The hanging judge was sober, he hadn't had a drink. The only person on the scene missing was the jack of hearts. Cabaret was empty now, a sign said closed for repair. Lily had already taken all of the dye out of her hair. She was thinking about her father, who she very rarely saw. Thinking about Rosemary and thinking about the law. But most of all, she was thinking about the jack of hearts.
Only person on the scene missing was the Jack of Hearts. Was he there or not? That was Lily, Rosemary, and the Jack of Hearts. It's new every time I listen to it. And this is Evening Under Lamplight on Cambridge 105, Community Radio in Cambridge. And I'm Robert Louis Abrahamson, looking with you at the theme of gambling. One of the more famous gamblers in the American gambling pantheon is Skye Masterton, one of the characters appearing in the pages of Damon Runyon's stories about Broadway in the first half of the 20th century. The scene of Guys and Dolls, which was partly based on the story of Skye Masterton. Let's look at the opening paragraphs of the story Guys and Dolls, or The Idol of Miss Sarah Brown, which first introduce us to the Skye. Damon Runyon's world is populated by all sorts of gamblers, and notice the way Runyon uses only the present tense. To have the story set only in the present is a gambler's style. Even when the gambler bets on something happening in the future, he judges the possibilities only by examining what is going on in the present. The gambler's world of constant risk keeps the attention always focused on the present moment. It's a kind of Zen meditation, after all. But let's get on to the Skye. Of all the high players this country ever sees, there is no doubt that the guy they call the Skye is the highest. In fact, the reason he is called the Skye is because he goes so high when it comes to betting on any proposition whatever. He will bet all he has, and nobody can bet more than this. His right name is Obadiah Masterton, and he is originally out of a little town in southern Colorado, where he learns to shoot craps and play cards and one thing and another, and where his old man is a very well-known citizen and something of a sport himself. In fact, the Skye tells me that when he finally cleans up all the loose scratch around his hometown and decides he needs more room, his old man has a private talk with him and says to him like this. Son, the old guy says, you are now going out in the wide, wide world to make your own way, and it is a very good thing you do, as there are no more opportunities for you in this burg. I am only sorry, he says, that I am not able to bankroll you to a very large start. But, he says, not having any potatoes to give you, I am going to stake you to some very valuable advice, which I personally collected in my years of experience around and about, and I hope and trust you will always bear this in mind. Son, the old guy says, no matter how far you travel or how smart you get, always remember this. Some day, somewhere, he says, a guy is going to come to you and show you a nice brand new deck of cards on which the seal is never broken, and this guy will offer to bet you that the jack of spades will jump out of this deck and squirt cider in your ear. But son, the old guy says, do not bet him, for sure as you do, you are going to get an ear full of cider.
I got the horse right here, the name is Paul Revere, and here's a guy that says if the weather's clear, can do, can do. This guy says the horse can do, if he says the horse can do, can do, can do.
I pick him Valentine, cause on the morning line, the guy has got him figured at 5 to 9.
But his epitaph, he went to buy a half, according to this here and that telegraph.
For Paul Revere, I'll fight, I hear his foot's all right. Of course, it all depends if it rained last night.
I know it's Valentine, cause on the morning line, the guy has got him figured at 5 to 9.
But just a minute, boys, I got some feedback. Noise, it says the great grandfather was equipoised.
I tell you, Paul Revere, now this is no bum steer. It's from a handicapper that's real sincere.
I know it's Valentine, the morning works look fine. You know the jockey's brother's a friend of mine.
So make an epitaph, he wins it by a half, according to this here and that telegraph. Epitaph,
Valentine,
I got the horse.
That was the original Broadway recording of the opening scene of Guys and Dolls, a three-part piece called Runyon Land Music, Fugue for Tin Horns, and Follow the Fold. And we heard the wonderful Stubby Kaye and Johnny Silver, Douglas Dean, and Isabel Bigley. Epitaph, Valentine, and Paul Revere, the three horses they're betting on. But the plot of Guys and Dolls turns around a craps game Nathan Detroit is trying to set up. And it's time to move over to gambling with dice. And dice bring in a new word for our gambling vocabulary, aleatory. The word comes from the Latin word alia, dice. You remember alia iacta est, the die is cast. And it describes any event or situation that involves chance, as in a roll of the dice. But here I want to pause with my own views and bring in Mary Beard, classics don at Cambridge, whom you may know as an authority on Pompeii, among other subjects. Let me tell you about a talk Mary Beard gave a few years ago at Lady Mitchell Hall on the subject of Roman gambling. These are just a few points I extracted from the notes I took as I listened. We today, she says, live in a risk society. The ancients, in an aleatory society. We see life as full of risks, which we are always looking to protect ourselves from. That, after all, is what health and safety is all about. But an aleatory culture welcomes the roll of the dice. The Romans saw gambling as a reflection of life, with all the hazards and luck as an integral part. So dice became an image of uncertainty. And there were dice oracles. People managed their lives by the throw of the dice, a bit like the I Ching, depending on the significance of what you rolled on the dice, as determined by a list interpreting certain combinations of numbers. But what sort of things did the Romans seek the dice oracles about? What, in other words, did they feel uncertain about? Not every culture worries about the same things, after all, and we don't always worry about our biggest threats. Dice oracles seem to have served a niche market of anxieties, mostly about business and trade, the threat of fire or illness or death, but mostly economic and commercial. Is this a good day to invest in a shipment of olives? Well, let's toss the dice to find out. People could even do this in public and consult pillars in the marketplace that listed a series of answers. There seemed to be nothing to be ashamed of in doing this, unlike, say, our modern newspaper horoscopes, which no one, at least no one you and I would know, admits to taking seriously. The Romans also saw the law as aleatory, which is interesting. Lawsuits and legal trials were hazardous. You never knew how they were going to turn out. I think this applies today, too, except in cases where the bribes are so large that there is no doubt. But we have no public language for this. We don't say that the latest verdict was, well, just a toss of the dice. Mary Beard finished the talk by looking at the modern university, and especially at the way those who fund research want to limit the risks. And yet, libraries are risky places, she said. Humanities research is part of a Roman aleatory culture, not a risk management culture. You have to state your outcomes now before you can get funding, but research into anything is, to a very large extent, an activity involving lucky discoveries, accidental connections, new ideas, and changed directions. One image from Mary Beard's talk that has stayed in my mind, pointing out the correspondence between gambling and, well, real life, is that of a Pompeian man coming out of a gambling place onto the streets and looking up to see the volcanic Mount Vesuvius smoking. Life was a big gamble in Pompeii, and we all know that they lost that gamble. But life is a big gamble for all of us, and most of us do not lose most of the time. I'm reminded of a famous, well, for me famous, passage from Robert Louis Stevenson's essay East Triplex that addresses this same issue. We speak, he says, with fearful whisperings about the prospect of death, which is always threatening us, but we go about our daily business nevertheless. Mary Beard spoke of Vesuvius, the volcano overhanging Pompeii. Stevenson speaks of a South American volcano. We've all heard of cities in South America built upon the side of fiery mountains, and how, even in this tremendous neighbourhood, the inhabitants are not a jot more impressed by the solemnity of mortal conditions than if they were delving gardens in the greenest corner of England. There are serenades and suppers and much gallantry among the myrtles overhead, and meanwhile the foundation shudders underfoot, the bowels of the mountain growl, and at any moment living ruin may leap sky-high into the moonlight and tumble man and his merrymaking in the dust. In the eyes of very young people and very dull old ones, there is something indescribably reckless and desperate in such a picture. It seems not credible that respectable married people with umbrellas should find appetite for a bit of supper within quite a long distance of a fiery mountain. Ordinary life begins to smell of high-handed debauch when it is carried on so close to a catastrophe. And even cheese and salad, it seems, could hardly be relished in such circumstances without something like a defiance of the Creator. It should be a place for nobody but hermits dwelling in prayer and maxoration, or mere born devils drowning care in a perpetual carouse. And yet, when one comes to think upon it calmly, the situation of these South American citizens forms only a very pale figure for the state of ordinary mankind. This world itself, travelling blindly and swiftly in overcrowded space, among a million other worlds travelling blindly and swiftly in contrary directions, may very well come by a knock that would set it into explosion like a penny squib. And what, pathologically looked at, is the human body, with all its organs, but a mere bag full of explosives? The least of these is as dangerous to the whole economy as the ship's powder magazine to the ship. And with every breath we breathe and every meal we eat, we are putting one or more of them in peril. Think with what a preparation of spirit we should affront the daily peril of the dinner table. A deadlier spot than any battlefield in history, where the far greater portion of our ancestors have miserably left their bones. Of what woman would ever be lured into marriage so much more dangerous than the wildest sea? And what would it be to grow old? For after a certain distance, every step we take in life, we find the ice growing thinner below our feet, and all around us and behind us we see our contemporaries going through. By the time a man gets well into the 70s, his continued existence is a mere miracle. And when he lays his old bones in bed for the night, there is an overwhelming probability that he will never see the day. Do the old men mind it, as a matter of fact? Why, no. They were never merrier. They have their grog at night, and tell the raciest stories. They hear of the death of people about their own age or even younger, not as if it was a grisly warning, but with a simple childlike pleasure at having outlived someone else. And when a draught might puff them out like a guttering candle, or a bit of a stumble shatter them like so much glass, their old hearts keep sound and unaffrighted, and they go on, bubbling with laughter, through years of man's age, compared to which the valley of Balaclava was as safe and peaceful as a village cricket green on Sunday. We live the time that a match flickers. We pop the cork of a ginger beer bottle, and the earthquake swallows us on the instant. Is it not odd? Is it not incongruous? Is it not, in the highest sense of human speech, incredible that we should think so highly of the ginger beer and regard so little the devouring earthquake? A strange instance of man's unconcern and brazen boldness in the face of death. Thank you. That was The Dance of the Fossils and Skeletons, a macabre image to go with Stevenson's passage about our aleatory unconcern and brazen boldness in the face of death. It was from Saint-Saëns' Carnival of the Animals and was performed here by the South German Philharmonic Orchestra and Hans-Peter Gmür. But if you remember, that song from Guys and Dolls began with the guys betting on horse races. But it was followed by the Salvation Army Band with its call to follow the fold and stray no more, a kind of different form to follow. And for many people, religion is about gambling as much as anything. They are staking their souls on the bet that following the religious practices will win them a place in heaven. But in fact, perhaps it's more accurate, continuing with Mary Beard's point, to say that their religion is risk management. They practice a religion as a kind of insurance policy to ensure them a place in the better world. That's what religion meant to Job, for instance, at the start of the book of Job. It took a series of terrible disasters, suffering he had no way of understanding, to shift Job from this insurance policy religion, where he did everything to placate a demanding God, to an actual encounter with God, humiliating, overwhelming, passing all human understanding, but richer, in fact, than anything he could have anticipated. And that's the point, after all. An aleatory life may be painful and destabilizing, but it is also richer, full of surprises that keep our eyes open to what's going on, and with high stakes that make each moment significant. We have spoken of the risk management life as the opposite of an aleatory life, but we might also say that the opposite of gambling is predictability. In our fear, what we want is a predictable world, where we know where we are, so we can be in control at least a little. And yes, life is predictable to an extent. It is the job of science to discover what is predictable, but in the end, this is only a very small part of life. We are still just tossing the dice. And that's good news, because a predictable life is a boring life. And that's where our Kinks song comes in. The title is simply Predictable, and we get our usual Ray Davis neurotic schlemiel, suffering from the oppressive life of conformity and uniformity we have created for ourselves. Don't know why I'm even bothering. Yeah, that's the mood I'm in. Go out for a walk, then I come back in. Predictable. That's the word of the year. All I see, all I hear. Go to my office, sit at my desk, predictably just like all of the rest. All of my life is monotony. I'd go out for a walk, but I know it would be predictable. Sure as the nose on my face, predictable. Same for the whole human race. Sure as the nose on my face? Yes, a cliché. And what is a cliché, after all, but predictable language? Fresh use of language is a gamble. We never can be quite sure that we will ever get our idea across. Once we had so many options. Once we had dignity and grace. Now we have got nothing but our own time to waste. Why can't it be like never before? Yeah, ain't life a bore? It gets harder and harder the harder I try. Feels like a good time to die. I kiss you hello, then I kiss you goodbye. Just like the stain on my tie, just like the jacket I wear, the way that I'm combing my hair. I turn on the TV, just sit and stare. There's nothing happening there. Yeah, that's the word of the year, predictable. All I see, all I hear.
Predictable.
Every day
got nothing but a long time to waste.
Predictable.
Yeah, that's the word of the year.
Predictable.
All I see, all I hear. Why can't it be like never before?
Predictable.
Yeah, ain't life a goal?
Predictable.
Life gets more and more. Just like you've heard it all somewhere before.
Predictable.
Sure as a nose on my face.
Well, there we were with our Kinks song entitled Predictable, as you could have predicted from the lyrics. One activity in life that is always a gamble is art. The artist, in whatever sphere, never quite knows whether the work of art will succeed, or if the artist thinks it succeeds, will the audience or the public get it and applaud it? Ask any writer, musician, painter, architect what it's like to get reviews of the work, and you'll hear that it's all a gamble. It's impossible to predict the response. And that, after all, is what makes it good art. It's alive and impossible to pin down. Well, let's end, as we so often do, with Leonard Cohen. Everybody knows, he sings, and gives us a long catalogue of things everybody knows. It's all fixed, nothing secret, and in fact, the cards all seem stacked against us. But my question to you this evening, under lamplight, has to do with the tone of the song. Does the song describe the same kind of anguish and despair as the Kinks' Predictable? Or is there something hopeful here? Are we like the people of Pompeii, where everybody knows Vesuvius will explode one day? But yet we still put down our bets and call for another throw of the dice? You have to read the tone of the words and the voice and the music. And the way you read it this evening may be different from the way you read it tomorrow. Everybody knows, but only about some things, and not really for very long. And before we go, here's something that not everybody knows yet, but you should know. Starting with our next show, which goes out on March 25th, we will be on air at 9 o'clock, not 10 o'clock. A slight change to our Cambridge 105 schedule. So tune in then, or come to the podcast at momentsunderlamplight.com for Evening Under Lamplight with me, Robert Louis Abrahamson. And now, everybody knows.
That the dice are loaded, everybody rolls with their fingers crossed. Everybody knows the war is over. Everybody knows the good guy's lost. Everybody knows the fight was fixed. The poor stay poor, the rich get rich. That's how it goes. Everybody knows. Everybody knows that the boat is leaking. Everybody knows. this broken feeling, like their father or their dog just died. Everybody talking to their pockets. Everybody wants a box of chocolates and a long stem rose. Everybody knows. Everybody knows that you love me, baby. Everybody knows that you really do. Everybody knows that you've been faithful. Everybody knows you've been discreet, but there were so many people you just had to meet without your clothes. And everybody knows. Everybody knows. Everybody knows. That's how it goes. Everybody knows that's how it goes. Everybody knows. And everybody knows that it's now or never. Everybody knows that it's me or you. And everybody knows that you live forever. Oh, when you've done a line or two, everybody knows the deal is rotten. Old Black Joe still picking cotton for your ribbons and bows. And everybody knows. And everybody knows that the plague is coming. Everybody knows that it's moving fast. Everybody knows that the naked man and woman are just a shining artifact of the past. Everybody knows the scene is dead, but there's gonna be a meter on your bed that will disclose what everybody knows. Everybody knows that you're in trouble. Everybody knows what you've been through. From the bloody cross on top of Calvary to the beach in Malibu. Everybody knows it's coming upon. Take one last look at this sacred heart before it blows. And everybody knows. Everybody knows. Everybody knows. That's how it goes. Everybody knows. Everybody knows. Everybody knows. That's how it goes. Oh, everybody knows. Everybody knows. Everybody knows. That's how it goes.